Levant schooner squadron had a number of Greek kikes, wooden Greek fishing vessels with very powerful engines in them. And the idea was that they were sort of cue ships, I suppose. We did some training with them in Beirut, but it never came to anything. It might have been useful if we'd had to land on any of the islands using them, I suppose.
What happened to you next?
We did some parachute training. Very funny thing there. We were tested for colour blindness. And I'm as colour blind as could be. And we were all lined up in front of the MO, Dick Lawson. And all he had to test us was the cover of a magazine. And he pointed at different colours and asked each one of us in turn what they were. And I gave all the wrong answers. And he said, "Oh, my Lord, you'll have to follow the man in front." And that was what happened. But we did this parachute training, and the very next day we were due to do our first jump. But we had the afternoon off in Tel Aviv, and got back to the camp in the evening, only to be met by the sergeant major rushing round in circles, telling us to pack up because we were going to invade the Dodecanese Islands. So we were taken down to the harbour and embarked on a Greek destroyer, and away we went to land on the island of Castellorizzo, which is, I think it's in the Dodecanese group, just within sight of Turkey. And we landed there to tremendous acclaim from the inhabitants.
With any opposition?
No, none at all, no. There was no enemy there whatever. The Italians had capitulated. The Italians were, in fact, occupying the Dodecanese at the time, but their government had given up, and there was no opposition from them at all. From Castellorizzo, we went to land on Kalymnos, and from Kalymnos, we went on to Leros, landed without opposition on all these places.
What date are we talking about now?
This is 1943, about September. While we were on Kalymnos, I think it was, the Germans invaded Kos. And so we were all taken off Kalymnos and concentrated upon the island of Leros. There was a little incident during that time when the Germans landed on Kos. We had a patrol of New Zealanders on a little island called Pserimos, P-S-E-R-I-M-O-S. And I, with my knowledge of Greek, which wasn't very extensive, but at least I could get by, was instructed to take a little Greek kike with a couple of Greeks who were brothers and owners of the kike to see whether I could get this patrol off Pserimos. And these two brothers, of course, knew the Aegean like the back of their hands, and they sailed round the back of Pserimos, away from the little town, and we landed, and I saw a shepherd boy and asked him where the British were, and he pointed to the top of a hill, and I got my binoculars onto the top of the hill, and I saw a little man sitting up there with his binoculars on me, and it was the officer in charge of the New Zealand patrol. So up the hill I went and told this chap that I got this kike waiting for him, and they all came down and we boarded the kike and got away just as a German patrol came over the hill. They didn't fire at us and it was all quite peaceful. And we got back to Leros. Yes, it was Leros by that time, quite easily. But later on, I was one of a patrol sent to the island of Levita, L-E-V-I-T-H-A. We were in two parties. I was with a small number of Y patrol and a small number of Rhodesians under the command of John Olivey. on the other side of the island, there was a party of New Zealanders under, I think it was Jack Sutherland. The information we had was that the island was in the hands of about 25, I think it was, German prisoners of war who had been in the course of being transported across the Aegean on a little old tub of a naval vessel called HMS Hedgehog. And the story was that they had overpowered the crew and had put into Leviter and landed there and were sitting there waiting to be rescued. And the idea was that we would go and capture the island and take them prisoner. So we landed full of high hopes, and we found that the island was being used as a base to invade Leros. It was stiff with with German troops, and they were these rather high quality Edelweiss people, rather specially highly trained mountain warfare men they were. And we were grossly outnumbered, and there were, about 5 killed, I think, and the rest of us were taken prisoner.
Can you describe the incident?
Yes. Our party got up to one of the central points of the island where there was, I think it must have been a weather station. It was quite a modern-looking building, and we made that our headquarters, and we could see the Germans on the opposite hill and fired away at them as best we could. And they had a mortar, which we didn't, and I was in a little slit trench, and a mortar shell landed just in front of me, and the next one landed just behind me. So I thought, oh Lord, the next one is going to be in the middle. So I got well down in my slit trench, and I heard this mortar shell coming, and it landed on the parapet of the little slit trench and showered me with earth and stones, and it didn't go off. So that was a lucky escape. But after that, John Olivey sent me and about 4 others, I think, to attempt to attack the hill where the Germans were from a flank. So away we went, and we found ourselves in front of a large expanse of open ground with no cover at all. And when we reached this point, the Germans started sending over aircraft. They were seaplanes, several of them, and they flew low over us, although they didn't fire. And we were really pinned down. So I said, well, the only thing we can do is to get back to the headquarters, this weather station. And away we went, made our way back there. And when we came in sight of the weather station, we could see people walking about there, and we thought, oh, well, it's all right. And walked boldly up towards it over some open ground. And we found too late that they weren't our people who were walking about. They were Germans. And then we saw that we were covered by 2 machine guns, and there was nothing to do but give up. So we joined the rest. Oh, my friend Ron Hill was in the other party with the New Zealanders, and they had much more of a battle than we did, and they actually ran out of ammunition. They'd taken a lot of prisoners by the time they had to give up. But in the end, we were all made prisoner. We stayed on the island that night, and the next day we were taken by flying boat to Piraeus. The flying boat landed on Piraeus Harbour, and we were taken from there into Athens, where we stayed in a sort of enclosed part inside an old Italian barracks. I think it must have been the officers' mess where they kept us. There was barbed wire all round our little... it's a building, a separate building apart from the main barracks. There we were kept for a few days, and we were subjected to questioning and all that kind of thing. It was quite well done. It was all very friendly. I managed to keep hold of my silk escape map, and a few other things. and eventually we were put on a train to go up to Stalag in Germany.
Could I just stop you there and yes. ask you, was it just the Desert Group people who were captured then on Levita?
On Levita, yes. And we stayed as a group there. And we were still just Desert Group people when we were put on the train to go to Germany. While we were in Athens, the Battle of Leros was staged, but I know nothing about that, and no first-hand knowledge, but Leros was eventually captured by the Germans. But anyway, we put on this train, and there was a little convoy on the train of three cattle trucks, you see, each filled with about 40 men, I suppose. There was a little square open space in each corner. Couldn't call them windows, but there was no glass. There was barbed wire crisscrossed over each window, and I was fully equipped for escaping. I had the silk map, as I said, and I had a hacksaw sewn into my flies, and a little compass sewn into the collar of my battle dress.
Was all that standard?
Yes. And so with the hacksaw, we cut through the barbed wire over one of these little windows, cut through it on three sides so that that the fourth side could be used as a hinge, and the whole barbed wire tangle could be pushed up like a window. And Ron Hill and I decided to get out as soon as we could, and the first opportunity we had was after the train had crossed the Yugoslav border from Greece. Incidentally, two chaps got out in Greece. They were Bamford and Chatfield, and they'd done it in a rather spectacular manner by kicking the boards out of the end of the cattle truck they were in. They were in the next one to us. And the following morning after this, the German Feldwebel paraded us, and he was very cross about this, and made us understand that if anybody else tried to get away, we'd be shot out of hand. But when we saw these broken boards, we just fell about laughing. That made him even crosser than ever. But anyway, soon after we got into Yugoslavia, we had the first opportunity to get out. The train, until then, and this was 5 days after leaving Athens, the train until then had been stationary every night, and we thought that the best thing would be to escape at night. No, I'm rather wrong there, because Bamford and Chatfield got out at night, but we didn't get out then because we were passing through an area where there were minefields indicated on both sides of the track, and we didn't fancy tramping through minefields, but Bamford and Chatfield were perhaps a little bolder, and they weren't put off by these signs, Achtung Minen. So the idea was that I would get out of the window first and hang on to the outside of the truck until Ron Hill's feet appeared through the window, and then I was to drop off. Well, I got out of the window and was hanging on to the outside of the truck when the train went into a tunnel. So I had to wait until the thing came out at the other end of the tunnel, and then Ron Hill's feet duly appeared, and I dropped off and crouched by the side of the track until the whole train had gone by. And I might say I've never felt so lonely in all my life as when that red light at the back of the train disappeared into the distance, and there was I all by myself in occupied Europe. But I walked up the track for a few yards and came across Ron crouching behind a telegraph pole, and he'd unfortunately hurt his leg jumping out of the train. Our parachute training, incidentally, had helped quite a lot in this. The train was going about 20 miles an hour, I suppose. But he got up, and we had decided that we would walk on a bearing just south of west, and we figured that this would be the shortest route to the Adriatic Sea. We thought at the time that we were north of a town called Skopje, S-K-O-P-L-J-E. At least the Serbs put an L in it, the Macedonians don't. But we were mistaken in that. The town which we thought was Skopje was in fact Veles. They call it Tito Veles now. So we were a little bit out in our calculations. Nevertheless, it wouldn't have made much difference to the bearing that we decided to walk on. So off we went on this bearing. It was pouring with rain, and it was November by this time, and pretty chilly. We just had our battle dresses, and we each had a little Italian blanket which had been issued to us by the Germans. And poor old Ron hadn't had much luck at all. He had thrown his pack down with his blanket rolled up and attached to his pack, and it had bounced back under the wheels of the train. And the train had gone over this roll of blanket so that when he opened it up, it was full of holes, rows of holes, like those little paper men that you can make. Nevertheless, away we went. I had a blanket as well, and we had fortunately both been issued in Athens with a Red Cross parcel, and we hadn't eaten much from these parcels, and we had most of the contents left still in our packs. We walked on this bearing south of west for 5 days. One night was very, very cold indeed. We decided to walk only at night and hide up during the day. We decided to avoid all human contact, because we weren't certain about the natives. And I was walking in front on this compass bearing, and I looked behind me, and Ron wasn't there. So I went back to find him, and I found him sitting on a rock. This was very high up in the mountains, and he said, "Look, I'm sorry, I can't go any further." And remember, he'd hurt his leg, and he'd twisted a muscle, and he'd taken two or three chips out of his leg, which were beginning to fester. So I looked round for somewhere to stay the night, and I found a little crevice in a rock, which was dry, and there was only room for one, though, and I put him in there, and looked round for a place for myself, and found another spot which wasn't quite so sheltered, and we were very tired, and I went straight to sleep. But in the morning, as it was getting light and it was still raining, I woke up and found to my astonishment I couldn't move. It must have been exposure, I suppose, but I was very fit, we were both very fit, and I just started moving my fingers and toes about until I got my limbs moving, and eventually managed to get up and got back to Ron, who was perfectly all right. But he'd been rested, and so on we went. And we decided to walk by day that day, and we found ourselves going up a hill and up and up and up, and we were clearly going through the clouds. And then we came out onto the top of this hill, and we could see for miles on top of the clouds. We were looking down on the clouds, and there was no other piece of land visible. So obviously we were on the highest piece of land for as far as we could see. And later on, we found the name of this mountain that we were on. It was called Solunska Glava, which means the head of Salonika. We went on, spent another night out, and the next day we thought, well, blow this, we've got to get some sort of help from people, and we won't be so careful about concealing ourselves from now on. So we walked boldly into the outskirts of a village where there was a stream, and lots of village people were there filling up their water containers from the spring. So we filled up our water bottles and behaved in a friendly manner towards these people, who seemed completely struck dumb by our appearance. And then we walked on towards the village, and we were met by a chap gesticulating wildly, and he clearly was telling us that we weren't welcome there, And so we turned round and went the other way. But before we did turn round, Ron says that he saw some men in uniform in one of the houses in the village ahead. It turned out that he was right, and they were Bulgar soldiers. The Bulgarians were occupying this particular part of Yugoslavia, which was, of course, right down in the south in Macedonia. So we skirted round the village and eventually came to a river, which we found was called the River Treska. And it was going rather north of where we wanted to go, but nevertheless we followed along it because there was a good path going by it, going along the river. And when it came towards evening, we saw a little isolated hut, which was clearly occupied. There was smoke coming from it. And we decided to ask for some help there. There were two men there, and they didn't like the look of us at all. And they pointed up the hill and said, in effect, "You push off up there. We don't want anything to do with you, you see." We had indicated to them that in sign language, because we didn't know a word of the language, they certainly indicated that we weren't welcome. But after a minute or two, one of these chaps came chasing after us, and he beckoned us back. So apparently they'd had a conference and had decided to look after us after all. So we went back into the hut. And this hut was just about the most primitive human habitation you can imagine. It was divided into two, the animals on one side of the partition, the humans on the other. And there was a fire burning in the middle of the floor, which was an earth floor, and the smoke was finding its way up through the thatch, no chimney. And there was a cooking pot hanging from one of the beams, the roof beams, hanging by a chain over the fire. And they cooked us a meal. And the meal consisted of what we found out later was called kachamak. And this was maize flour, a bright yellow flour. The way to prepare it was that you boiled your water first, and then you put handful after handful of this maize flour into the water until it came up out of the water like a pyramid. And then you allowed it to heat through for a minute or two, and then you stirred it all up into a sort of porridge so thick that you could pick it up in lumps in your fingers. And this was our evening meal with little bits of dried meat. I didn't know what it was. Ron said it was duck. It may have been. I really don't know. But nevertheless, anything to eat was welcome. And after that, they indicated that we could sleep by their fire, which we did. And several hours later, I don't know how long, because we'd been asleep, we were woken up by a chap with a whacking great rifle, a big old-fashioned thing, and he was saying, "Documenti, documenti." And so we showed him our pay books, which had not been taken away by the Germans, as they should have been. We were left with our pay books.
Had you previously explained to them that you were English
As well as we could, that's right, in sign language. We'd put our wrists together as if they were bound, you see, and then made the sound of a train, and then indicated that we jumped out of the train and run for it, and they seemed to understand. So this chap looked through our pay books, and when it was clear that he couldn't find what he was looking for, we asked him what he was looking for, and still in sign language, of course. He produced a Bulgarian banknote. Remember, I said the Bulgars were occupying Macedonia there. And this banknote had been made by Thomas de la Rue, Angleterre, it said along the bottom. And so he was looking for this word Angleterre on our pay books. But although he couldn't find it, he was convinced enough, and there it was. He accepted us for what we apparently were, and he took us away across the river, which we had to ford, wade across, up to an isolated little village called Kregurevats. And we were put in an empty house there, where we stayed until the next day. And then we were taken away by two or three other characters and taken to a little isolated farmhouse. And later on we were joined by some other members of this gang, who carted us off to a cave, where we met quite a number of other people. Oh no, before that we went into a village, that's right, went into a village and were given something to eat. And a fierce-looking character with great long whiskers came in and said, "Hello, boys." So we said, "Oh, thank goodness, somebody who speaks English." And we poured out the whole story to him, and he was saying, "Yes, all right, yes." And in the end it turned out that he didn't understand a word. All he could say was, "Hello, boys." But eventually we turned up at this cave and met the colonel, whose name was Stoyan Markovich, and he had learnt English from a book, and if you spoke very slowly and carefully, he could understand. And these people were Chetniks. They were not partisans. They were followers of King Peter, and their general was Draža Mihailović. Nothing to do with Tito and his partisans. They were the Royal Yugoslav Army, who had taken to the woods with their weapons when the Germans had invaded in 1941, and had been there ever since. So there we were, and let me see, it must have been the end of November this time. And we were told by the colonel when we arrived that a courier had gone from there a few weeks earlier to go north to Serbia to attempt to contact the British mission to the parties, to the Chetniks, and they were expecting this this courier back at any time. So we thought, right, well, we'll stay with them and see what this courier has got to say, and see whether we can establish contact with the British mission in Serbia. And so we waited and waited, and of course Ron Hill's leg was still pretty bad, and we could do with a rest, you see. We were still a long way from the Adriatic. So Christmas came and went, and we were pretty hungry. There was one little incident during that time, in that there was a character in amongst these Chetniks that we'd decided was the Sergeant Major. I forget his name now. But one morning, to our astonishment, we found him all bound up and sitting or lying outside the cave. And he was there was a rope leading from his tethers, and somebody was holding